At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Today on a special Rambling About Cars, new Ford Ranger, sort of, new Porsche 718 Spyder, sort of.
Oh, you're being unfair
now. We're pouring one out for some discontinued cars, and there are a lot of discontinued cars, so there's going to be a lot of sad on this one. And are you hungry? How does a plate of nachos for $275 sound? There is an auto connection there that we will get to, so let's roll. It's podcast time. I am Christopher Smith and Mr. Chris Bruce across the way. And everybody that's joining us already, you see Ted Adam Green's in there. Group FBC is in there. Jay Ferrari. We love it. We love it. Keep on bringing in the people.
Yeah, we love comments. We love putting them up. We love saying hello to all you folks. And we have a guest this week. That is Jeff Perez. He is this from this site. I don't know if you know about it, called motorone.com.
What?
And he'll be, yeah, it's weird, right?
It's a small little car website. I don't know if you guys
right.
know.
Yeah.
Never heard of
if
it.
If you've never heard of it. But yeah, Jeff will be with us. He actually wrote the discontinued car stories that we will be kind of talking about at the end. But he also knows a hell of a lot about the news that's going on, so we'll be getting into that too.
Yep, I'm ready.
And once again, if you're listening to us live, MotorOneCom Facebook, MotorOneCom Twitter, MotorOne on YouTube, go there. You can comment with us. We see the comments live. We already have quite a few comments coming in. We love to share all of this with the Ramblers. It's rock and roll, guys, from Jay Ferrari 427. This is going to be, I think, a really fun an informative episode because we have a very diverse range of topics we're going to talk about today.
We do. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's get things going.
Yeah. Let's jump right in.
Let's talk about the fact that a new Ford Ranger debuted. Well, it's new. You kind of put it the right that it's sort of new because this is something that debuted back in 2021 in Europe or 2020.
2021, if I remember correctly, and a half years ago, the current generation Ford Ranger debuted for European and basically every market outside of North America.
That's right.
And now, 2.5 years later, we're finally getting the current generation Ranger in North America. It'll be on sale later this year. It's a truck that, honestly, most people probably already know, but there are some differences here for the United States. We're talking primarily engines and trims. It launches with the XL, the XLT, the Lariat trims. Those are all very familiar to people in North America. I mean, the styling is the same. The interior is the same. The features are the same. In North America, though, the Ranger, you can get it with the 2.3-liter four-cylinder. That's pretty much the carryover from the current model, 270 horsepower, 310 pound-feet of torque. But you can also now get the 2.7-liter EcoBoost V6. It gives you a little bit more power, 315 horsepower, 400 pound-feet of torque. And then there's the Raptor. You want to talk about the Raptor, Bruce?
I can talk a little bit about the Raptor. Yeah, obviously the Raptor is the off-road oriented trim of the Ranger, just kind of like it is on the F-150 or the Bronco, etc. But in this case, you get an engine making 405 horsepower, 430 pound-feet of torque, which is a lot of power in a mid-sized truck.
It's a sprightly truck, and it's worth pointing out that's considerably more than what you get for the Ranger Raptor in Europe. Same engine, but it's detuned. In other markets, like down in Australia, I think it's 392 horsepower, if I remember correctly. So
that sounds right.
We're getting a little bit more for our weight in the States.
And I should also say, it's not just about the engine. Like, the engine is the big deal, but it's more than that. You get a set of 2.5 inch diameter Fox live valve internal bypass shocks, and those have multiple modes that a driver can pick from. You also get 17 inch wheels with 33 inch BF Goodrich tires. Or if you prefer, you can get 17 inch wheels with a simulated bead lock on them. So kind of,
which, you know. I mean, that's what exactly is simulated bead lock? I mean, bead lock, I mean, it's a style that helps protect the tire. So why would you want to simulate, or is it just they're simulating the look of it?
Yes. My understanding is that you cannot have bead lock wheels be road legal. If anyone in the comments, anyone in live chat wants to correct me on that, again, that's what I understand. And so that's why automakers do the simulated look, that it gets you the same appearance without actually being beadlock. I don't know why the government or, you know, the DOT or whatever doesn't let you have beadlock wheels for road use, but
I was not aware of that.
Yeah.
I need to Google that right now.
I was just looking because I knew the ZR2 wasn't this powerful, but I didn't realize it was almost 100 horsepower less powerful than this.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of crazy to me. Like, what is the... I mean, it has to be the most powerful midsize truck, right? Or compact truck.
Well, so as I did our pricing post, and we can talk about that in a minute. But the thing is that we know the Tacoma is coming, and we know the Tacoma Trail Hunter is coming, which is going to be essentially their Toyota's competitor against the Raptor. We don't know how much power that version has, though. So still kind of, at least at this point, yes, it's the most powerful, but let's not, you know, it's still a little bit up in the air.
But I think we were talking last week about the plethora of Tacoma teasers we've had, and we know that the iForce Max hybrid powertrain is in there, whether it's four cylinder or a new one or the V6. If it is straight from the Tundra, that's a Raptor competitor.
That would be amazing.
That would be a Ranger Raptor competitor. And Ford is showing, hey, we're going to put 400 horse on our midsize truck. Game on, right? And Toyota is kind of set there, maybe, if they want to.
Senior editor Brett Evans made a good point when I was writing this story on Tacoma a few months ago, and I can't remember exactly what the point was.
But it was good.
It was a good one. That they're not gonna, they're almost definitely not gonna put the V6 in the Tacoma. I think that truck is built for the new four cylinder, and the iForce Max is gonna be a four cylinder. And they're just using the hybrid, that same branding that they use for all their hybrid powertrains. That said, it's got to be more than ZR2. I don't know if it's going to be as much as Ranger Raptor, because that's 400 horsepower is a lot. I think the TRD Pro currently has like 275 or 280. So that would have to be a pretty huge bump, unless they really want to like change the whole segmentation of that truck. I think it's going to be somewhere between Ranger Raptor and ZR2. I still think it's going to be interesting. That powertrain is going to be really good.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see it. EKG Canadian says new Ranger is very impressive. New GMC Canyon in Colorado, plus upcoming Tacoma will be better. Tacoma will come with multiple, I'm assuming you meant bed options there, and more. I mean, what do you think, guys? We don't yet have the new Tacoma to do a comparison. Right. But Bruce, I know you were writing up a comparison just from a pricing standpoint,
right?
Between these trucks, what do we think?
So again, we don't know price. We don't know any of the details about the new Tacoma. So it's
right.
We're still kind of speculating there. Let me look in terms of the Ranger Raptor. So the Ranger Raptor starts after destination at $56,960. A Tacoma TRD Pro currently is $49,020, both of those after destination. So that's almost $7,000 difference. Basically a $7,000 difference. Mm-hmm. Again, though, we don't know. We know that the Trail Hunter, we know that there's going to be a new Tacoma Pro 4X because we've seen the bed on it. We also know that they're going to go beyond that and do a Trail Hunter. So
I actually think... I think the Trail Hunter might be like an overlanding trim. I actually don't think it's going to be as powerful as hardcore. I have no like facts to back this up, but this is just my like thought. I think they're really going in on the overlanding thing.
Well, if I remember correctly, last year, Toyota said something about Trail Hunter being a new overland brand, and I believe it was referenced in their teaser for the Trail Hunter. So yeah, I agree. I don't think Trail Hunter is going to be a crazy powerful Tacoma.
I guess it depends on what they mean by overlanding. Like, do they mean overlanding the way we talk about it, where, you know, it's someone who drives off into the middle of the bush and who, you know, camps? Or is it, I guess it just depends. I'm reserving judgment. Let me put it that way.
I mean, my take is, okay, it's going to sit a little bit higher. It'll have some big tires or it can crawl over stuff. You don't need a lot of power to do that.
No, you don't. You don't.
And it'll have things like recovery hooks that are probably red.
Oh, we've seen that in the teaser. Because
that's what you do now. Recovery hooks. They have to be red. It'll probably have like special lighting, maybe come with some special tent options, things like that. But guys, isn't it interesting that we're talking a lot about Tacoma when we're really supposed to be working on Ranger? That kind of says something about the excitement for Tacoma
by like a ton. It's the best seller. I did that story too on like best selling trucks last year, and it was not even close. It's still crazy how well Tacoma sells. And I know a lot of that is just like fleet sales and stuff too, but that's not just a Toyota thing. Every company does fleet sales with these trucks. So it's like, it's interesting how ingrained the Tacoma is in this segment for buyers.
Well, I think it's also worth mentioning just the fact that these two trucks that we know are going to compete against each other are arriving at within weeks of each other, or debuting within weeks of each other. Like, we know the Tacoma is not going to debut. It's soon. We don't know exactly when, but it's on there.
I know.
You're not allowed to say.
I think it's official
it's,
now. I think they
yeah,
confirmed
it's oh, revealed. Is it? We can say it
next week. Oh, okay. Then never mind. Okay.
I will be flying to Hawaii to see the new Tacoma next week.
I was playing it safe, but okay. So yes, we will see the new Tacoma next week, and we saw the Ranger this week. So, you know, and they're going to be competing against each other. So it's natural to say these two trucks in the same segment. It's natural to compare them against each other because that's what buyers are going to be comparing them against each other. You know,
well, let me back things up just a moment, because we were talking a little bit about some comparisons between the various models and pricing. We do have starting prices for the Ranger in North America right now, and it starts at $34,160.
It does.
And that's quite a jump from the current generation, which had a starting price of $28,895. So it's taking a pretty healthy jump in starting price. That includes destination, and that's going to be for the Ranger XL, right?
Yep.
By comparison, Colorado starts at $30,695.
I'm the one that wrote the story. So
Nissan Frontier, here, buddy. $30,705. The current Tacoma, we know the new Tacoma is probably going to be a little bit more, but that's at 29. I mean, the Ranger right now is positioning itself a little bit closer to the GMC Canyon. It starts at $38,395. And then you have the Jeep Gladiator that starts at $40,000. I mean, that's certainly the price leader.
The Jeep Gladiator comes standard with four-wheel drive, whereas the other ones are two-wheel drive. So it's certainly fair to compare them, but you know, the Gladiator's sort of a bit different as well. But yeah, it's the Ranger's definitely up there. It's on the higher end of the pricing spectrum for its segment.
And EKG Canadian already has some flavor going here. Guys, the new Ranger is already sold in others for nearly 2 years. I will tell you, North America is getting a much worse model. Well, we'll be putting that to the test when we get our hands behind the wheel here. That'll be coming on pretty soon.
I don't know what this means, but I just like the use of words. Jack Sassy Trail Hunter. I have no idea what that means, but I like just the way the words ring in my brain. Jack Sassy Trail Hunter.
Well, you know, we had Group FBC saying Trail Hunter sounds like an 80s action TV show.
He did. And it does.
I think that's the star, Jack Sassy. He's the trail hunter.
That's right. Yeah.
We have the best ramblers. I just got to say, keep the comments coming, everybody.
We totally do.
But yeah, I mean, that pretty much, I think, covers it for Ranger. Like I said, new to North America, but as EKG Canadian has pointed out, it's been in other markets for quite a while now. But it's nice, I think. I don't know why there was the delay for North America, but I think this truck was, I think this truck is needed right now, especially as this segment appears to be heating up.
Jeff, do you have any feelings on that? Why it took so long for them to Ford to introduce it into this market? Do you have any opinions on that?
I just think that Ford wasn't convinced that people were going to buy it. And I don't know why. I think that's kind of it's kind of a no-brainer, to be honest. Like, I think the Ranger is kind of just not an interesting truck as a base truck. Like, and that whole segment.
I don't know if I would agree with that. Okay.
Okay. Well, that whole segment to me in general is just kind of like a weird segment, because you could just buy a full-size truck, right, for not that much more. And now Ford has the Maverick, so you can go back down a little bit. So I think that to me, that segment lives in a little bit of a limbo as far as trucks go. So Ford was maybe like, well, the Ranger doesn't sell super well. Why would they want a Ranger Raptor? Mm-hmm. If people really want a Raptor, they'll go full on F-150. But to me, I think it makes sense. If you're going to sell the Ranger at all, you might as well have a Raptor version. And I think it's going to be a really good little truck. I think it's really cool.
Not obviously having any seat time in the new Ranger, a smaller, lighter, less expensive Raptor than the F-150, that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
that could be a lot of fun. And I also remember a few years ago when Ford, this must have been back in, I think, 2018, 2019, when the Ranger came back to the North American market. I remember Ram putting out a statement, or maybe it was an interview somewhere when we covered it, saying they don't have any plans for a midsizer right now at Dakota because they had their Ram Classic. So this must have been about 2020 when the new Ram came out. They had their Ram Classic that was priced under 30 grand. Why would they want to bring out a midsize truck? They'll just funnel people into the Ram Classic. Yeah. And now we're looking at all of these, just about all of these midsizers. I mean, the cheapest ones are starting just under 30. And we're stepping into the mid 30s. So yeah, you start getting into that realm of, just from a pricing standpoint, what makes more sense here, the mid-sizer or the full size? Of course, a new Ranger is probably about the same size as like an F-150 from 25 years ago or so. So
oh yeah.
Maybe even earlier than that, but yeah.
So yeah. Well, I think we've covered the truck segment here pretty well. You gents feel like jumping over to something a little smaller and a lot faster.
Yep, let's do that. While we're transitioning, that I just have some pickup feelings that I want to share, and that is that it's nothing bad. It's just that to me the midsize segment is interesting because it's kind of like what Jeff was saying, where I feel like automakers kind of ignore it because they obviously have much higher profit margins on your F-150 and then your Super Duty, you know, your larger trucks. But I almost feel like this is the truck that people actually could use. This is like the daily use truck for a lot of people. And I'm happy if you disagree with me, I'm happy to hear that argument, but I feel like this is kind of the perfect size of a pickup truck.
I think that's right. But your point, they're trying to upsell them for sure. Like the dealers want them to go in and say, you could buy a Ranger with this equipment, or you can just move up to an F-150 and it's a little bit bigger and you're not paying that much more. But yeah, I think you're right. This size just really, really works.
Yeah, I would agree. And in the meantime, I mean, our commenters, the Ramblers, are awesome. We've got a whole TV show planned around the Tacoma Trail Hunter. Group FBC says, yeah, Jack Sassy, he drives a black Tacoma with a red stripe up the side. Eric Nefron, GFR. He's got a hound dog named Duke.
The writers are on strike, after
an incident in a bar.
We're not going to be scabbed. We're going to wait. But we could submit this to a network and have a show, goddammit.
I was going to say, I hope nobody from Toyota is watching this. They're going to steal our idea if Toyota sees this. They're going to make it into like a 5-part commercial or something.
Jack Sassy, the Trail Hunter.
Oh, God.
That's not a bad idea. And you heard it here on Rambling About Cars First.
Oh, that's so good.
Let's talk about, speaking of so good, let's talk about the 718 Spyder RS.
Yeah.
You knew it was coming. It's everything that you know and love about the hard top 718, but without the top.
Yes. And so this is also Porsche saying this is the farewell for the 718 model with a combustion engine. We know that the next gen Spyder, or sorry, the next gen Boxster and Cayman are going to be electric. This thing is a pricey beast at $162,150, which is
clearly Cooper is upset by this.
That is not Cooper. That is Lou, his
that
buddy.
Is Lou.
Yeah.
See, Lou and Cooper, they want to get behind the wheel of the 718. They want to get behind the wheel of the 718. Hey, no roof. Those tongues can be hanging out all over the place at 191 miles an hour. It's the naturally aspirated 4-liter flat six that spins to the stratosphere, 493 horsepower, 331 pound feet of torque. For those who don't remember, the hardtop 718, 7-speed PDK transmission, 191 mile an hour top speed. So the wind can blow through your hair and then just rip it right out of your skull. 0 to 62 miles per hour. Under 4 seconds. It's
3.4
seconds. So technically under 4 seconds.
That's under 4 seconds.
I have numbers. I have like my notes here with numbers all over the place. Clearly I was writing with my left hand and I didn't even know it. Jeff knows how weird of a day I'm having. We're not even going to talk about we're not even going to talk about phantom emails that I swear to God I read. That must've been some weird dream. Anyways, weight 3,100 pounds. It's 88 pounds lighter than the regular Spyder. So, this isn't just a hopped up Spyder with just a little bit more power.
But it's also more power. Weight.
Yeah. They've lowered the weight. The suspension's retuned. It's just over an inch lower. But it is 162,000. I did a little bit of comparison shopping. And like, for about the same price, you can have a 911 GTS Cabrio.
Oh boy.
With a little less power, 473 horsepower, and it's a little less glamorous. It's the 3-liter turbo. It's the 911, 0 to 60, 3.4 seconds. Sounds familiar. The 911 goes 192. The Spyder goes 191 for about the same price. And for the Targa fans, and I'm a Targa fan, you could get into the Targa S with the same power and just about the same performance for another 20 grand less. And then you could actually throw some options in there.
Yeah. You're paying for the engine. I mean, the GT4 RS that came in is the same.
You're paying for the engine and the exclusivity. This is the end of the road that.
Yeah. And it's a great engine. I mean, it's amazing. Oh, totally. I haven't driven the Cayman with that motor, but from what I've heard, it's really good. So yeah, if you want that as a convertible and you want like a special edition just before they kill it off and turn it into an EV, then this is it. It's expensive. It's really expensive. But
yeah. Well, and I mean, like you said, though, it's more than just, hey, a performance model. It's the end of the line. It's something extremely special. I have seen other people make comparisons like I just did. Well, you can have this 911 GTS or you can have this. I honestly don't think that applies here. In context, I think this car needs to sit on its own. Because it's not a case of, well, I could rather have this. If this were just like another 718 Spyder, sure. But like you were saying, like our commenters have been saying, it's a special engine. It's a special edition. Yeah.
There aren't a lot of really good small convertibles anymore, right? Like the TT is gone now. The Z4
we're going to be talking about that in just a second.
Yes. So we'll talk about some of those, but in terms of like small sporty convertibles, the Cayman or the Boxster has been like the pinnacle, right? For how many years has this been like the best?
Jeff, what? Our boss, Adrian, would disagree with you as he is Miata owner.
Okay, well, Miata, I don't categorize Miata as this because it's like the affordable one, but in terms of like luxurious, sporty convertibles, I think that the Boxster has just been the pinnacle for as long as it's been around. Like, I don't know why other companies don't do this. Maybe because they don't sell super well, but you would think that another company would come along and have like a genuine Boxster competitor that you're like, okay, maybe this is the alternative. I think the Z4 maybe had a minute, right, where it was like really good.
Well, I think what tried to compete against it and then, you know, the Boxster outlived it would be the SLK. That I think you could put that on the same, I certainly think those are comparable. It's just, you know, that is now retired and the Boxster is still around. But
And the new SL is like a 911 alternative, which is really good, but it's just, it doesn't have the same kind of like charm, you know.
Canadian enthusiast agrees with the SLK.
But yeah.
SLK. You know, I maybe I don't have my pulse on the market as good as I think I do, but I get the feeling that people just aren't as interested in a convertible anymore. For whatever reason, I certainly love them. But I don't love them all the time. I just own a feeling. Yeah. And I don't drive it all the time.
Okay.
It was a really nice day today. I'm very, very sad to be sitting in my basement right now because it's still about like 75 and sunny outside. I could go out and just have a nice little romp in the convertible. But no, I mean, am I wrong there, people? I don't feel like people are as interested in a convertible. I've talked to a lot of people that are just like, yeah, I just don't want one. I don't want one. And I remember when I was younger, it's like everybody wants a convertible. And and back in the day, like way back in the day, you could get a convertible on just about anything.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was going to say it has to be a generational thing, right? I don't know what the transition is of like younger people don't want convertibles or because, to your point, like back then, like every car was a convertible and that was the coolest thing you could have is just pull up in a convertible. But now it's like, not really. And I don't like convertibles. I'm not a convertible person, but the Sebring convertible, yes. Perfect.
So
I was about to mention that because my parents were this close to buying a Sebring convertible in the late 90s. Like,
I need to make a confession here. When my wife and I got married, we rented a Sebring convertible. And I always thought like, that first generation Sebring before the front end got really goofy with the dumb grill and the big sort of oval, sort of not headlights. That first generation, I thought that was a pretty good looking car. And I almost bought one here a few months ago when I moved back to Michigan and I wanted to jump back into a quick car. There was, it was an old Ferrari 427 cheap.
Is reading my mind. Remember the PT Cruiser convertible? There were so many of those when I grew up. Like, I remember seeing those cars all the time.
Oh, they were big. That was the dope back in the day. I'll try to keep it PG-13. I remember I was in college in my earlier college days when it came out. And,
also, Group I FBC, mean, no. The Murano no, Cross Cabriolet Murano was Cross, never okay. That was never okay.
Never acceptable. But there were waiting lines. There were backlogs for people wanting to get the PT Cruiser. And it kind of became...
Oh, God, I remember
it,
that.
It kind of became the joke. And honestly, I don't hate them. I think they're still cool. You can go out and, as Brian Gurney here is saying, our commenter, PT Cruiser with a 2.4 turbo was fast. It was. Hideous, but
part of his sentence.
And you could get it with the manual. I think they get a bad rap. I think give it a little bit more time, and I think people are going to be like, you know what, that wasn't so bad. I also like the Mustang too, so don't listen to my opinion.
No, I think there's going to be I think the PT Cruiser got a bad name because on the secondhand market, they got so incredibly cheap. And, you know, I think a lot of the people that bought them didn't necessarily take care of them for, you know, for whatever reason. I could see, though, a collector's market for the PT Cruiser happening in the same way we see it for like the Aztec now, where people ironically enjoy the Aztec. The PT Cruiser deserves that 1,000%.
Yeah. I think that especially like pre-2008 FCA Chrysler, those were some of the worst cars in terms of build quality and material choices. Like the PT Cruiser, the Chrysler Crossfire. I remember my buddy bought a Chrysler Crossfire slightly used. I think it had like 20,000 miles on it. And it was the coolest car when he bought it. And I got in, and after a week, the headliner started falling off. Just like the material on the headliner just started falling off. And then it just turned into this absolute nightmare of a car. Just it was awful, but it looked great. Like, it looked awesome. And yeah, there were some really good, fun performance cars. Remember the Dodge Neon, the SRT4? That thing was a riot.
But it was and even before that, like the right, Neon,
it had horrible build quality, but a fantastic powertrain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the RT and the ACR, I mean, the first gen ACRs are still just adored in the autocross scene because they were so nimble. They were so nimble. They handled well right out of the box. Still just good, fun, inexpensive cars. And I mean,
we went from talking about $167,000 Porsche to talking about Dodge Neons.
What's the name of the show again? Rambling about cars. And we have some great commenters with us today. I really love reading all of your comments. I got to jump back really quick to EKG Canadian. PT Cruiser was a cool car. They just aged badly. I think that's spot on because they weren't really touched at all for their entire run.
I don't know that they're
much. And I love
slight baby little refresh in there, but no.
Yeah, like, but not really enough to notice.
No.
And I love the Mustang too. We just became BFFs. There's like you, me, and like two other people that I know in the world. So
yeah,
we're in an exclusive club.
I Smith, I love you, buddy. I do not get the Mustang 2. Sorry.
You need to drive one.
I
you need to listen to that 120 horsepower V8 that sounds like the badass muscle car ever. And then you look down and you're doing 30.
Okay.
But they're surprisingly nimble. Tighten up the suspension a little bit. That would be a hilariously fun autocross car. And with a little more power. Yeah.
Am I mistaken that a lot of hot rodders, they'll take the rear end out of the Pinto, which is also the same rear end out of the Mustang 2.
The front end.
Okay. Sorry.
Mustang 2 front end, the steering, very, very popular.
Okay.
In the aftermarket world. So yeah.
Yeah.
Little bit of love there. From Mustang 2 to Porsche 718 Spyder RS.
I'm fairly certain that some of these prices you could buy a used Mustang 2 or have some of this.
Oh, we're jumping over to the nachos now. Okay. Well, before we jump over to the nachos, it's time, but let me remind everybody, we're live right now. You can go to Motor1.com on Facebook, Motor1.com on Twitter, Motor1 on YouTube. You can comment with us. We're having a really good ramble today where we're talking about a little bit of everything.
Comment there. In my mind, the Mustang went from the first gen to the Fox body. Nothing happened in between.
Ouch. Oh, that hurts. The reason we went to Fox body and then the reason we continued on, sorry to say, Mustang 2, because Ford built the car that people wanted at the time. And that's to this day remains one of the best selling generations of all time. It gets a bad rap, but that was the car that people wanted. And that's the reason the Mustang went on. So
you're not wrong. It's just they're hated today. Like they're hated, buddy. Like,
yeah, I know. But spoilers and window louvers and stripes and King Cobras on the hood. when the commenters are telling me to stop, it's time to sit back and take a drink and listen to some $275 nachos.
That's right. So, Jeff, you live currently, you're right outside of Miami still, right? You haven't. Yeah.
I'm about 40 minutes north of the track itself.
Okay. So Formula One's Miami Grand Prix was last weekend, and some things came out. Some people were posting about some stuff on social media, and that is how insane the prices are, specifically for the Hard Rock Beach Club, which is kind of the faux marina that they have. It's where they paint it to look like a beach, but it's not actually a beach. And the prices are.
And I mean, it's to be fair, I mean, it's a pretty exclusive place. I mean, this.
Oh, yeah, it is. This is not the normal.
We're not talking about general seating at the F1 race in Miami. This is a very exclusive club, but there are some prices here to talk about.
Yes. And the reason we're talking about this, that on social media, we wrote the story up and it kind of blew up for us. And so we want to share it with you, the listeners on the podcast.
In case you missed it, because I've never seen anything like it. Tell us a little bit about some of these prices, Bruce.
Well, okay. So this is the one that calls out. We're going to start with, because it is so egregious. So if for anyone out there, Tito's Vodka, it's a vodka brand out of Texas. It's
good. It's good.
Very affordable. Like it for a, you know, for a normal size bottle, it depends, obviously, the state that you live on. It's going to be more or less. But for me here in Ohio, $20. You know, $20 normal size bottle. If you wanted it there, it was $560.
Yeah. Seems legit. Because I'm a Scotch guy. Let's jump down to the Scotch whiskey here section.
Okay.
And particularly section. Particularly, I'm a Glenfiddich guy. I love the Glenfiddich. It was a couple of years ago and I've gone through it by now, especially working in Motor One. I bought an 18-year single malt Glenfiddich. It was a little over $100 for the bottle. Here at the race, you could get a 12-year Glenfiddich for, that is what, $650?
That's correct.
I looked that one up on Walmart. Walmart has 12-year Glenfiddich. $58.
Yeah. And I'm going to call this out because I'm a gin guy and Hendrix. I know the price. Here in Ohio, it's right about $28.
Right around. I was going to say that gin is my go-to and Hendrix is my go-to. And I just looked it up. $35 at Total Wine for me.
Okay.
$560. Cheaper,
but $560
so,
a bottle.
I saw something, and I know we'll go into food too, but like
we're gonna go there. Oh yeah.
This is the beach club, right? This is where the marina is. First of all, big update this year. They put real water in the marina. So I think that's the premium. That's the premium that you're paying for now is real water.
Because previously it was just painted blue.
Yeah, last year they just painted it blue.
How much does it really cost to get water in Miami, Jeff? Come on.
Well, so what I was reading, because I was looking into this a little bit on Reddit and Twitter and stuff. And so the real wealthy people don't sit in the beach club. The real wealthy people have their suites and they have all their stuff is free and they get all their stuff taken care of. This is the wannabe rich people of Miami that overpaid for the beach club.
It costs more to be rich than to be rich.
Yeah. Well, and so they're fleecing a little diplomatic, them.
But if we're taking the gloves off,
they're trying to fleece them because these people already overpaid for their ticket. So now they're just going to overpay for food too. At least that's what I saw on like Reddit, but it's insane. It's crazy. The Miami Grand Prix is just gross.
Well, so and we should put this out there. Wait,
before
Grand Prix.
Before you scroll off this page, we got to shout out one more thing here.
Okay.
If you can scroll up, what was $12,000? That's the
$100.
No, $12,000.
The Azul tequila up top.
There's something that's $12,000, really? Oh my God, there is.
Yeah.
Azul Tequila Ultra, $12,000.
Oh, I had missed that.
Do you know how many cars I have purchased in my life for $400? Never mind $12,000. That's wild. That's wild. And but hey, there's living large, man.
Yeah, there's something I want to mention here is that it came out that the Miami Grand Prix is the second most expensive Formula One race there is on the calendar. Monaco is more expensive, but Miami's number two. So it, you know, just keeping that in mind, but also the food prices.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah. That was alcohol. We should mention, okay. Alcohol is always be a little pricey, but
for this specific place that, you know, this Hard Rock Beach Resort, I believe it's called. So if you want a watermelon salad that serves four people, $250.
Ugh, I hate watermelon.
If you want, so for anyone who doesn't know, if you're ever shopping, I happen to know this, U5 means that you would get five shrimp per pound. Whatever you see, you know, whatever number you see is how many they are per pound. So U5, five or under, chilled prawns, $500.
Seems fair.
I hate it. I hate all of this.
Look at the caviar. I know caviar is always an expensive dish anyways, but it was $400 an ounce.
It was. And that was an add-on to any item. So like, let's say you're enjoying your, you know, your prawns, your fruit refresher, whatever. You're like, I'm still a little bit hungry. What should I eat? I want some caviar. $400 an ounce.
For an ounce. But then, hey, I'm a nachos guy, right? Hey, by the way, Ramblers, I'm down about 12 pounds so far since I started this crazy crash diet a couple weeks ago. So
good for you.
I'm doing good. And seeing prices like this, that just peels the fat off right there. Because I'm a nachos guy, but not a $275 a plate nachos guy.
Those are pricey nachos.
I guess it says here a little bit about what's in there. What is that? Creamy salsa verde, salsa Mexicana,
cojita cheese,
onion, pickled onion, cheese sauce. No lettuce? $275 and I can't get lettuce?
Nope.
No tomato?
The one that made me, so there are two of here that make me laugh. And then Jeff, I'm going to pass the mic to you, but there are two here that I want to call out. The F1 platter, which is $500. And for that, you get sliders with secret sauce. You get a ribeye quesadilla with chipotle sauce.
That sounds good. And you actually get
crispy chicken tenders with honey mustard.
Chicken tenders.
I'm fine with all of that, but keep in mind, this serves four people. That means it's over $100 per person. And I want,
does it have like the edible gold? I mean, have you seen that? There is such a thing as edible gold. And I've seen food dishes prepared with edible gold. It's like the $10,000 steak where it's a steak with edible gold.
And for anyone watching, both the warm dishes and the chilled dishes, they say they serve four people. Here's where I got really confused when I wrote up this story. They also have desserts. Good. Let's have some desserts.
I need to take out another loan before we get to desserts.
The ice cream is $245, but you'll notice it doesn't say serves four. So is this $245
probably for like a little cup like this
of ice cream
in Miami? You better not let that shit sit for a second at that price. Mm-hmm. You're watch like $20 dripping away every 5 seconds.
They're already talking about moving it to nighttime next year because it's been so hot the first 2 years. Like, it's in the middle of a parking lot. What did you expect?
But yeah. $245, you can have Jungle Bird, which is Flor de Cana, pineapple, and lemon aperitif sorbet. You can have Jack and Chocolate, which is Jack Daniel's single barrel, chocolate ice cream, and dulce de leche. Or Passion Pre, which is Piper Piper Height. How do you say that? Heightseek?
Don't ask me. I'm the world's worst person to ask for pronunciation on words.
I'm going
to
say Piper Heightseek and Passion Fruit Sorbet. I don't know what that first thing is. For $245, it better be damn good.
I'll say this. I'm going to let everybody in on a little secret that I found out. Yes. Miami Grand Prix, first of all, to me, is the most unappealing F1 race on the entire calendar. It is in the middle of a parking lot. It's in a football stadium. It's in a neighborhood that is has nothing else to do. It's 40 minutes from South Beach, whatever. The Vegas Grand Prix upcoming is really interesting to me for a number of reasons. One, it's a street race. Two, and this is the most important reason, you can watch the race from the balcony at Margaritaville because the race goes directly in front of the Margaritaville balcony. So imagine sitting on Margaritaville balcony, drinking a margarita, having some cheeseburgers. That sounds like how I want to watch an F1 race, not whatever Miami is doing. Vegas is going to be awesome, and I'm going to try and get to Margaritaville.
That would be amazing. That sounds really good. And you know what else sounds really good? Jay Ferrari 427 says $10 nachos from Applebee's. Done deal.
Yes.
I need to correct Jeff just a moment. It's not hamburgers. It's hamburgers in paradise.
Yes, of course.
Yes,
of course.
Cheeseburger in paradise.
Yeah.
Oh, damn it.
Cheeseburger. I messed up my own joke. It is cheeseburger in paradise. Damn it.
Cheeseburger in paradise. There was wasn't there a chain of restaurants called Cheeseburger in Paradise?
No, that's the Margaritaville. That's what he's talking about.
Right. Jimmy Buffett.
Jimmy Buffett.
Sorry, but I thought there was a restaurant chain called Cheeseburger in Paradise.
There was a chain called Cheeburger Cheeburger that was like based on the Saturday Night Live sketch or something. I went there once. It was terrible.
Not at all.
Yeah.
What did you get?
A cheeseburger. It was a long time ago. I don't remember.
Okay. Hey.
I just remember it was bad.
Can I get a grilled cheese? Cheeseburger.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not going to jump into the SNL skit, but point being, that cropped up on social media, a little bit of sticker shock. We were kind of joking about it just in our team's chat. I was like, we should really write this up. So we did. And we're happy to share that stuff with Motor One readers. Really happy to talk about that stuff here on Rambling About Cars. Jay Ferrari. If you are paying those prices, your servants are driving Lambos. Possibly. Well, from your description, it sounds like maybe the people in there are like the used Maserati buyers.
Oh, 100%. They all roll up in their Ghiblis with 50,000 miles that they bought last week, and they
before overspend. They break down.
Yeah, and they overspend on the beach club.
Well, hey, hopefully the meals were good. Hopefully the food was good. Hopefully the people that were there enjoyed it and have a good time, because that's really what this is all about, right? We're poking some fun. No,
right.
$12,000 for a drink is dumb. But
and I wrote up the story. They had many other places to eat there. Like, it's funny because it's so absurd, but there were other places you could go to eat. I wasn't there. I can't vouch for them, but I know they were less expensive than that. So, you know,
I like Brian Gurney's comment too. This also seems like a way of keeping the profits without having the beach club overcrowded. Yeah. If you want just to have a few people, price it way out of the range of everybody else. That's a good way to go.
Sure.
Good way to go.
But Jeff, it's kind of your time to shine here, because we are going to talk about a story that you put together for us. And that is the cars that are being discontinued in 2024.
Yeah,
I don't know if we're necessarily going to go through every single one of them, but we're certainly going to go through the highlights.
Yeah, we'll get your bottles ready. We'll pour one out. Some of these cars maybe are like they're still around. Others will be missed. I'll leave it at that.
2022 was like the really big year for discontinued cars. I don't know why exactly, but I think we can go back to the older list. Like, it's on the website. You can go look at it. But there was like 40 something cars that were discontinued after 2022. I guess it was just the EV push as more companies were like transitioning to EVs. It was a lot of old cars like the Passat that had just kind of lingered for too long. This year is actually not a ton of cars that are being killed off, but the cars that are being killed off, I think, are some really good ones and some surprising ones.
Yeah.
And I think it's an interesting
vehicles with passionate very passionate followings.
Yeah.
I think yes. That's worth mentioning.
Totally. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of interesting ones this year.
Well, we've got the list. Obviously, if you go to MotorOne.com to search up discontinued cars, you'll see it right there.
Sorry, Smith, go ahead.
I was actually about to ask Jeff the same thing. Are there any cars on the list that you want to call out first and foremost?
That's exactly what I was going to ask. Oh, wow.
Well, so, gosh, I don't want to just start with the first one just because it's right there, but I have a huge soft spot for the Alpina B7. I actually flew to Germany and got to drive that car on the Autobahn and through just the hills around whatever the name of their headquarters is. I forget what city that is, but it was great. It was one of my all-time favorite trips, and that is one of my all-time favorite cars. So I am sad to see it go, and Alpina, I guess, as a whole might be gone in a few years, which is really, really crappy. But
yeah, we should tell our listeners, BMW acquired Alpina, so
yeah,
their future is kind of, we don't exactly know what BMW is going to do with that nameplate in the future. Like, we don't know if it's going to stick around, if it's going to be for some sort of special models. We just don't know yet. So
well, yeah, Jeff, yeah. I mean, you said, let me ask you a question. You said you drove this, the Alpina B7. And I also know you've driven many, many M cars, and a lot of people draw comparisons between the Alpina and the M because they generally have similar horsepower figures, and they have, obviously they have performance upgrades, but I think people understand that the Alpina maybe a little bit softer, a little bit more of a plusher touring car versus something that's hardcore. I mean, what's your take on that?
It's definitely a lot softer. The suspension is tuned way, way differently than a lot of the M cars. Even like the throttle response is a little bit softer than what you get, like that immediate jolt of like an M3 or an M4. And yeah, in general, they just feel more special. They feel more luxurious. We actually got to see the factory where they do everything for the Alpinas. And it's not just like they're not a tuner, really. They are ground up, like do everything custom on these cars. All the leather is super, super nice. The wood is like some of the best wood you can get in the industry. Like, it is a genuine improvement to a normal 7 Series, which is already a nice car as it is. So they do a really good job. I like I said, I'm going to be sad to see them go if they disappear.
Interesting, interesting. And EKG Canadian comments, Alpina will be a more luxurious M model. Guys, do you think there's room in the lineup to have your regular BMW, and then you have your performance M model, and then maybe you have your performance luxury Alpina model?
My opinion, and I'm echoing what Jeff just said, is that Alpina always seemed to me like, you know, an M car is maybe a car that you would take to a track. Mm-hmm. And Alpina was a car that might still have the same horsepower output, but was tuned for the road. That, it, you know, maybe the suspension was a bit softer, it was a bit more comfortable. You know, it wasn't necessarily a track car, but it was still very fast. And as Jeff said, had a very, very nice interior. But I wonder once, you know, now that BMW is bringing them in-house, I wonder if that distinction can still exist.
Yeah, it'll be tough. I don't know, especially now with all the EVs that they're pushing out and they're kind of making that transition. We'll see what they do. It'll be interesting.
Sure. Well, let's talk about some other vehicles on the list. Can I jump to a vehicle here that I'm sad to see go? That
Porsche, maybe I've got it pulled that, up that here. Maybe, which one do you want?
Maybe I'm weird on this. I'm sad to see the Nissan Maxima go.
Oh God!
Oh yeah.
Are you?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not. I think that pretty much says it all.
This Nissan Maxima go. I'm sad to see the Maxima name die. Sure.
Yeah.
Because it started, what, 83, 84, something like that? No, so it's basically as old as I am.
I mean, you go back further than that. I think it was the late 70s or early 80s when it was still Datsun, the Datsun Maxima.
Yeah.
And then it transitioned over to Nissan, and then it transitioned from rear-wheel drive to front-wheel drive. I always felt the Maxima was like 9/10 of the way to being a really dialed in proper sports sedan that was still fairly affordable to the masses. And I think it's the, and Nissan enthusiasts, forgive me here, because I don't know my generations right off the bat. The fourth or fifth gen models, when we're talking about like the mid to late 90s up through the early 2000s.
Four-door sports car, as they called it.
When they got the
side window.
I can't remember if that was the case or not, but especially when they got the VQ engine, when they got the 3.5 with a 260 horse, and you could still get it with a 6-speed manual.
Much later than I am, but yeah.
I mean, those were stout performers. And even before that, I mean, this is back in the day when I was really big into my Toro shows. And I felt invincible. It's like, yeah, no other sedan can touch me. And those Maximas were really close. I remember being at the drag strip with a friend of mine that had a Maxima, and I was like, people might be surprised to learn I was a little bit arrogant back in the day. I don't know if that comes across, but I was like, yeah, we can race, sure, whatever, if you want to give it a shot. And I mean, we were side by side all the way down the track, and I mean, that was a pretty good run too. So I'm sad to see that lineage die away. I'm sad to see the heritage go away. And same. I'm also sad to see that, you know, Nissan is, they're not going all the way to 10. They were close, I think, on making the Maxima something really amazing. And it's going out here with just what it is. There's no real special edition to speak of. If the name comes back at some point, obviously it'll be completely different, probably an EV. Not that it's going to be a bad thing, but for now, yeah, I'm sad to see the Maxima go.
I bet it'll come back. I bet they're just going to kill off the Maxima as it is, as a gas car, and then 3 or 4 years from now they bring it back. Maxima is actually a pretty good name for an EV, like, you know, Max Charge or Max Power, sure, or whatever.
Could be.
I think they bring it back, but God, this generation was just, I remember the first time I drove it, I was actually like delightfully surprised. And this was 2015, I guess, when it came out. I was like, oh, VC, the engine's pretty good. I don't remember if it has the VC turbo, but the engine's pretty good. Like CVT's okay. And then like it aged so quickly and everything just like blew past it in terms of powertrain technology and EVs. Like it aged so fast and it stuck around for way too long.
Yeah. And I agree with you, Jeff. Maxima is a good name for an EV, but clearly automakers don't listen to this show, because Smith and I have been saying Thunderbird should be brought back.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Well, it has to be back eventually.
It has to. Well, I said from the beginning, before Lightning came out, I said, if Ford doesn't use Lightning for their electric truck, then I'm gonna riot. Then I'm just gonna go crazy, because why would they not ever do that? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And thank God they did. But yeah, Thunderbird,
one of the biggest no-brainers. Yep.
Yeah, Thunderbird is another great one.
Yeah,
Ford has a few.
And I mean, it's in China, but you know, Buick uses Electra for its EVs in China. They have to do that whenever they do an EV in the US, right? Like, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. You know? Well, you know what another sad one on this list is? Is Charger and Challenger.
Yeah. Well, sad? I don't know. I don't know if I agree with you on sad.
Really?
They're going out with a bang, though. They're not going out with a bang.
Well, I don't know. So we talked about this on Happy Hour last week? 2 weeks ago. I just drove the last call Challenger with the 710 horsepower, whatever it is.
Yeah, you drove the something black, right?
The black ghost.
It was such a weak special edition. Like, the badges were falling off and the paint was just like whatever. Oh, for $100,000, I'm like, really? Like, this is one of your best selling cars still, and you're just gonna kind of like, meh.
Just gonna, I mean, phone
the,
it in
the what's the one that's pictured here? I can't remember what the hell it's called. The Challenger.
What is that one?
The Demon 170.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So
that seems
cool. Like, that's a full-on drag car. Like, that one seems cool.
Yeah, yeah. There's the Demon 170. Sorry. I was
saying that. So that's wrong. Just a legit drag car that they made road legal.
Yes. Yeah. So that's cool. But the other one's kind of weak. It's kind of sad. I mean, these are such good cars and iconic cars. Like, they're definitely going to, I'm excited for the EV version. I'm excited for the Charger Daytona EV, but
me too.
Yeah, it's hard. A lot of people I think are most upset about these going away.
I would agree, just because they have such a passionate following and they've been around. And we've had discussions about this before, about Dodge just being able to keep these older models fresh somehow and interesting and in the minds of buyers. Challenger last 2 years has been the best selling in its segment in the United States. And we're talking about a platform. I mean, if you went and bought a 2011 Challenger and put it next to a 2023 Challenger, be like, which one is which? I mean, the enthusiasts will know. They'll be able to
pick other than headlights like and taillights,
you know, like paint and little, you know, different wheel up, you know, things like that. And to some degree, the Charger as well. I mean, the Charger got its facelift in what, 2014 thereabouts. It's still a pretty dated model, but I mean, they look good. They put out just gobs of power. They're pricey new, but I mean, I think you can go out and you can get like a 2016 or 2017 Hellcat for like under 50, I think under 40.
Yeah.
700 horsepower for that. Yeah. I mean, they're out there. They have just a tremendous following. Of course, Dodge has been really beating hard on the drum of the Brotherhood and V8 performance. And I feel like they've kind of painted themselves into a little bit of a corner, because now they're having to transition to like EVs. And in the case of the Hornet, you know, smaller turbo four cylinders, and their people are kind of revolting against that. And it's like, well, you painted it for this long. But there's no, I don't think there's any question. The vehicles on this list of all of them, the Dodge Charger, the Dodge Challenger, those are the ones that people are going to be most upset about, just because they have such a legacy. EKG
also points out this Camaro is dying as well.
Yeah. So this list is, just to be specific, because this is easy, it's easier to do it when you're writing these lists, right? These are cars that are available for the 2023 model year, but won't be available for the 2024 model year. So technically, Chevy already said the Camaro is going to last another year, so which means it's actually going to outlast the Challenger, weirdly. There will be a Camaro next year, but then after that, Camaro's gone.
Well, it's 2024 model year, but I think production for the Camaro ends January 2024.
Yeah.
So yeah, you'll have the 2024 model year Camaro. Where you won't have the 2024 model year Challenge. So that'll be on next year's list.
Yeah.
Yeah. But still, they are competitive vehicles and they're both dying at the same time. Mm-hmm. Whereas we know, you know, we've covered this, Smith, that a new Mustang is on the way. So it's kind of for better, worse, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's the pony car now. It is the pony car.
I want to share this comment really quick from Group FBC. Think of all those exhaust shops being put out of business with nobody needing loud exhaust for their V6 Challengers. I got to disagree with you, because there are so many of these cars floating around in the United States. And yes, people will put the exhaust on their V6.
I've heard it too, man.
I wish I could unhear it. I guess it's like anything. If you put on a decent exhaust system, you can make it sound good. If you cut the mufflers off of it and just weld in some pipe, there ain't nothing going to sound good there. Not even a V8, in my opinion.
Agreed. Sure. Yeah.
Well, what else we got on this list, guys? Bruce, it's your turn to call out. You are sad that the Bolt EV is going away, right?
Yeah, I'm really brokenhearted. I'm crying about that every night. The one I'm kind of sad about, honestly, is the Audi TT. I'm not even that sad about it. It was a good vehicle while it lasted. Obviously, you know, it had its generations. It's just, you know, I think the first gen that super rounded. Everyone says it's very Bauhaus inspired, but I think I could argue with them because it's so rounded and not very angular, which is kind of what Bauhaus would be. But, you know, it was an interesting car. It's crappy to see it go away, but also it's run its course.
Mm-hmm.
And unless Audi had a designer who was really passionate about it and who could come up with something that was really interesting, just doing another evolution of the current styling, I don't think would have ever worked.
Didn't we have this argument on our chat the other day?
Or we might have.
A while ago about the TT. I think you and Kyle were talking about how much you liked it.
I like the first gen. I love the first gen.
And I said it was like one of the ugliest cars that I think Audi has ever made.
I think I remember that wrong. because I think I supported your argument, Jeff, and that never happened. So we must be right.
Yeah, I think that happened. Think you're
the
wrong.
First gen TT is just.
I can't.
No, with that it's first not. Gen TT.
It just looks so weird.
It looks too bubbly.
Yeah,
it looks too bubbly. It looks
now I'm gonna
too...
have to Google it to like really look at it again.
Nope.
It comes back to me just not liking really happy cars, and I felt like that car was just. I'm so happy to be a TT. No, sorry, and to be honest, I was never really a big TT fan. The current gen looks better, but I'm.
No, yeah. The current gen.
Sorry,
looks
guys.
Worse.
Sorry, guys. There are so many other cars I would get before a TT.
I like the current gen. It's not like an amazing car. It has some really good, like the TTS and the TTRS are actually really nice to drive.
Hey Jeff, Groove.
I saw that.
Some info for you.
I don't know. I think I'm the minority on that. Everybody likes the original TT.
I got your back on
Smith
that.
Doesn't either.
I got your back.
Me and Smith.
I'm the minority here.
I got your back.
What's this? Original TT looks like a Volkswagen Beetle that got stepped on.
That's true.
There you go.
That is true.
There you go. It sort of had that proportion where it's like the front and the back kind of look the same, right?
They do. Yeah, they do.
I mean, that was my take on it. And
I at least have a soft spot for the new Beetle because do you remember the game Beetle Adventure Racing for Nintendo 64? Did you guys ever play that? That was one of my favorite games as a kid. So I have a soft spot for the new Beetle. Even though, it looks like that's not a great design either.
You raced through San Francisco, right?
Or yeah, there was like a bunch of different weird maps.
Oh, Brian Gurney. I love that game.
Such a good game.
Jeff, you and Brian apparently need to hang out sometime, have some beers. Sounds like you guys would be friends.
A friend of mine has the TT now with the what is the most powerful one, whatever.
The TTRS?
TTS?
No, it's like a special edition or something. And he works for Audi, but he bought it and he loves that thing. And I got to ride in it and it is like super, super nice. So it's a good car, but it's run its course. Like it's really old. That nameplate in general is really old.
It is. I like Group FBC. Actually, you're right. The Mark 1 TT paled next to the styling masterpiece that is the Mustang 2.
Truth. Truth right there.
Okay.
Put some louvers on the TT and a chin spoiler. Maybe we can.
Yes, Brian.
Maybe we can jazz it up.
Our friend, Mr. Marks, has the, I'm going to have to ask him now, but he has a nice TT.
Okay. Go ahead.
Were you done, Bruce, or do you get more to go?
I was just going to say, I have a soft spot for the first gen TT. I think it's because of exactly how old I was when that car came out, that it was a semi-affordable performance car with really interesting styling. Like nothing else looked like the first gen when it came out. And you know, I think I like it for that reason. I have driven one. I'll be totally honest with you. They're kind of lackluster to drive. It's a car that's aesthetically pretty. It's not really great to drive.
Let's put this in context here. First gen Audi TT, about the same time as what? Nissan 350?
Yes.
Honda S2000.
Basically anything very early 2000. So Nissan 350.
BMW Z3.
Or would be first gen Z4?
I mean, honestly, I'm taking every one of those other cars first over the TT.
Okay. Yeah.
Boxster.
Oh, Boxster every day of the week. Yeah, that's an easy. Yeah.
Well, do you guys, I mean, do we like the R8? Do we care about the R8 leaving too? Like, is that a...
That's another car that kind of overstayed its welcome. That it's a good car. I have a super, super distinct memory, and I will pull it up here, of when the first gen came out, that I was at Mid-Ohio with my parents, and we were walking by, and someone was driving up in an R8 that had literally just come out, and someone asked, is that a concept car? Like, it looked like nothing else at that time.
Yeah. The Aeroblade was the big... I mean, that was such an interesting design when it came out. Yeah. And I don't think it aged super well, but I think when it came out, it was like really cool. Futuristic.
That's exactly what I would say. That when it came out, it was fantastic and it didn't age well. But yeah.
I like the new one a lot. I haven't spent a lot of time in it, but I drove it once and it's really quick, really fast, really nice, like super, super dynamic. I don't have like a soft spot for it. I don't know why. I like it, but it's not. Well, okay. The Huracan is. See, the Huracan's okay. We had this conversation too. Most Lamborghinis aren't cool. Is that fair to say? Like, no. If you buy a Lamborghini,
I agree with you, but not for
I guess it depends. It depends on if you buy like the rental Gallardo,
right? That's what I mean.
For cheap, like, that's not cool.
Like, but, Gallardo, a base Huracan are not cool cars.
I don't know. I see what you're saying.
He's right. I think he's right for different reasons than you think, but he's right.
It's just me being like a pedantic, and someone was agreeing with me in our chat, but like,
oh, a bunch of people look at our chat. A lot of people are agreeing with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so I think the R8 is still cooler than like a Huracan, but it just, I don't know. It doesn't have that. It doesn't do it for me personally, I guess.
I feel like the R8 is the choice if you just want that performance, but don't want to seem like, insert a mean nasty word here. I'm not gonna lower the bar. Okay. You know, if you want the mid-engine performance and that experience in the V10 sound, but you don't want to be you don't want to be the flashy guy.
Mm-hmm.
You get the Audi. If you want a little more attention, you get the Lambo.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd get the Lambo. Because I'm a Mustang 2 guy, and I'm all Mustang. But Bruce, to your point, I think
the word you're looking for is blanker. I'm not going to say
that's one of many words.
Yep, we'll
keep it friendly. The R8, it's been around a long time, and I mean, after a while, you just sort of get. Sort of work up an immunity to it. Like, you know, it's like, okay, there are a lot of them out there. If I really want to go get one, there's plenty of them on the used market that I could go get. Sure. They're not making a new one. That's okay.
That's the way I feel.
And at this point, I mean, it needs to come back has a redesigned crazy EV, because really when I think of R8, I'm thinking of, was it Iron Man 2 or Iron Man 3 when Tony Stark's driving the R8 e-tron concept back then. And of course, they did the e-tron. That was like the coolest.
Yeah.
And maybe my nerd cred is showing here. That was like the coolest. That was the coolest Audi right there.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it was two, but yeah.
To Brian's point, I bet the ratio of Huracans to Audi R8s at the Miami Grand Prix was like 1,000 to 1. I bet there were so many Huracans in the infield of that race.
Parked at the Hard Rock.
Yeah.
Well, I want to jump back to, I mean, with this discussion now, I want to jump back to a comment that Ted Adam Green had said. I'm scrolling back through the chat to find it. How many of these cars are ending to make room for EVs and to meet government mandates on miles per gallon? And I mean, I think that's a good point worth talking about. I would expect a good number of them.
Well, I think the Dodge one is interesting because Stellantis as a whole is making a huge EV push. And it is because of standards in part, but it's also just because of that's the business decision they're making, and they're investing a ton of money into that. Mm-hmm. So Dodge is like not immune to that. And yeah, the standards are going to kill them if they keep trying to roll out these same Hellcat engines. So I think they sort of have to make that move just to stay relevant, you know. Right. So the Charger Daytona SRT EV, however many letters and words are in that name, I think it's going to be interesting, and to see if they can like pull the buyers over from the current Hellcat crop, or if they're just going to lose a ton of buyers that are just like, nope, I'm just going to buy my supercharged V8 Hellcat and I'll keep it until I die. So there will be
a lot of those, but I think there will also be new adopters, people that wouldn't have considered it otherwise, but now, okay, here's fresh styling and I'm curious about EV performance. Guys, we've seen it with the Mustang Mach-E. And as you both know, in the early days, I was vocal against this thing being a Mustang, because it's like, it has nothing to do with Mustang. It's Ford just being afraid to build an interesting EV and then trying to sell it on its own.
Yep.
And I warmed up to that over time. And if I wanted just a fun daily driving EV that had some performance credit, I mean, I've driven the Mach-E. It's a cool vehicle. Mm-hmm. I think we'll see something similar with the Charger Daytona when it comes up, because I mean, it won't just be the high end SRT. There are going to be several trim levels for the Charger Daytona when it comes out.
Certainly.
This is a bigger conversation too, but remember, even when Mitsubishi made the Eclipse, a crossover, people went crazy. They were like, it can't make the Eclipse a crossover. And it's not even like a super futuristic EV or anything. It's just a normal crossover.
Yep.
I'm sure that's going to keep happening in the next few years.
Oh, for sure.
If I'm throwing my money down on the table right now, I think we're going to see that with Camaro.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. We know Chevrolet has said the Camaro is not...
Well, the Camaro name.
They said the Camaro isn't disappearing. It there's no immediate successor that they're ready to announce, but this isn't the end for Camaro. I mean, that's straight from Chevrolet. So we know that's going to come back in some manner. And I mean, we've heard, okay, it could be a crossover. It could be a sedan. It could just be just a Camaro EV.
Make it a truck. Make a Camaro truck.
A Camaro truck.
Although, why wouldn't you call it an El Camino at that point? I want to address real quick Ryan Gurney's comment. The fact of the matter is car enthusiasts aren't the vast majority of car buyers. And he's absolutely right.
Yeah,
he's absolutely right. And the thing is, and it's a point that I've discussed, it's got to be for 10 years now, is that there will still be cars out there to make people happy regardless of what it is that you're passionate about. If you want a sports car, there are thousands of Miatas or Pontiac Solstices or MGBs or, you know, fill in the term. Like, there are so many of them out there that if that's what you want, if that's what you're passionate about, they will still exist. But he's right that for the vast majority of car buyers, they want to buy a car, they want to go to work, and they want to come home, and that's it. And there's nothing wrong with that either. Like,
and it's not that they don't like their cars. They love the car. They like it for any number of reasons. But liking a car doesn't necessarily make you a driving enthusiast. And I say driving enthusiast instead of performance, because performance suggests that, okay, you have to enjoy driving something with a lot of power and tight handling where you can go out and pretend you're the race car driver that you never got to be. driving enthusiasts can just be somebody that enjoys getting out behind the wheel on the open road.
You don't need my point. Yeah.
You don't need power. You don't need crisp handling. You just need to enjoy the ride.
Yep.
And there are a lot of people out there that do that aren't nearly as vocal as the performance enthusiasts. And I think that's where you get some of the mismatch from.
Totally. I want to add to that. I want to, build on top of that is that, so thinking of my parents, they currently own a BMW i3 and they own a Chrysler Pacifica, but I would still consider them enthusiasts because my dad has owned a Porsche 944. He has owned a Plymouth Roadrunner. He has owned, a Jaguar XK8. He has owned any number of cars you would traditionally consider, enthusiast cars, just not what's in his garage right now. But I was talking to him just the other day and we're going to a race this summer, that what you drive does not determine whether or not you're an enthusiast.
Yeah, very for true. Sure.
I'll build on that a little further with my father, who is now 93 years old, and he's getting to the point. He doesn't think he's 93. He's like, I'm just still in my 20s. Professional truck driver.
I hope I'm driving, like that when I'm in my 90s.
Driving enthusiast to the core, to the point where like a couple years ago when I was still living in South Dakota, it's like, come out and visit. I was doing a lot of stuff with the Air Force Museum out there in Rapid City.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The car show you put on. Yeah.
He's retired Air Force. I was hoping he could come out and see what all I'm doing here at the museum. It's like, you can get on a plane. It's like a couple hours. Hell no. I'm driving this. The only time he was in the plane was when he was in the Air Force. And this is in like 1950. I think that's it. He wants to drive. He drives. Where he goes, he's not flying. If he's driving through 12 hours of Midwest cornfields, he's driving it. Why? Because he enjoys the drive.
Exactly.
From his big pickup truck that has like zero enthusiast cred, doesn't matter. It's comfy, but he's still, comfy
exactly.
behind the wheel. You're in control. Driving enthusiast.
Totally. Yeah. Yes.
I don't know where to go from there. We kind of rambled ourselves into a corner.
Jeff, unless you have something to add to that, but like that's the thing is that being an auto enthusiast does not mean you have to own a McLaren or a Porsche or a Corvette or something like that. Like
you can even own a Mustang too if you want.
That's good.
You know, it always comes back to this. As someone who writes about cars, has only written about cars his entire career, and would consider myself an enthusiast, you both know what car I want to buy. And a lot of people would say it is not an enthusiast car. That good old Avalon TRD.
Avalon TRD.
It always comes back to the Avalon TRD.
You know, I've got nothing for that.
I love you, buddy. I don't get it, but
I've got nothing for that. I always thought it was a cool car.
Yeah.
I don't, but again, I don't get it, but I respect it. And that's fine.
Exactly. That's all that matters.
Exactly. I don't have to get it. Like you don't have to get what I like either. It is what it is. We can all be enthusiast about cars in our own way. And then Smith, I've said this 1,000 times. If that means you're building models of cars that you can't own or you don't have the room for, you're still a car. As you look behind you at a bunch of models,
about 20 models back there. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that is still being a car enthusiast. There's room for everybody. That's right.
Except you granddam people out.
Time. But yeah, I think that's our show. But Jeff, do you have anything you want to promote? Any stories you've done recently that you think are worth listening or worth reading? Any videos you've done, social media, just whatever. Go for it.
I know we just talked about discontinued cars, but if you want to read the whole story, go to Motor One, click that link. That's always super helpful. That story evolves over the year as more cars are announced. So that's always a fun read. But for sure, follow us on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, everywhere you get Motor One content, and just keep following along.
Cool. And we'll have a link. We'll have a link for that discontinued article and all of our other articles on YouTube in the YouTube description after we get the everything posted up there. Again, Motor One.com Facebook, Motor One.com Twitter, Motor One YouTube. Like, follow, subscribe, share, talk about, discuss, subscribe, push the buttons, all the social things. Do them all. We love to keep going, and we love to ramble with our ramblers out there.
Absolutely. And I want to add one thing super, super quick is that we haven't. So we love your comments during the show. We put them up. We love them. It's super fun. We haven't received a lot of emails after the show.
Oh, I forgot the email plug. Shame on me.
No, it's not. Nothing.
Podcast at MotorOne.com. Email
that's
us.
Right.
You can email us photos. Like family friendly car photos. Yeah. Don't. Hey,
I'm at the Hershey chocolate factory. Just open the Pandora's box there,
Smith. I'm at the Hershey chocolate factory. Look at this big Hershey bar. Unless the Hershey bar has wheels on it, you know, don't send us that stuff. Podcast at Motor1.com. We love to hear your car stories. Anything you have going on? Any comments? If you're catching this after the fact, because even though we're live, we're still on all kinds of audio platforms, and we love our audio listeners, Spotify.
We're on Deezer, damn it.
Spotify, which I only radio.
We learned is Deezer. Like some sort of weird French audio thing.
We're on all the audios. Of course, you can always go back to Motor One.com or Motor One on YouTube. Watch the episode here. Catch us. Totally. Email us podcast at MotorOne.com. We love to hear from you.
Yep. So signing off. Good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We appreciate everyone who listens to the show. Again, as I say this every week, the fact that you decided to spend time with us is incredibly meaningful because there are infinite ways you could spend your time. You could be playing a video game, you could be watching a movie, you could be listening to another podcast, you could be doing anything, but you decided to spend that time with us, and that is incredibly meaningful to me because it just, you know, it really is. It's just meaningful that you decided that we are worth your time. So thank you so much for that. But that will be our show for tonight. We will see you next week. And goodbye, everybody.
We'll see ya.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.